Morning and happy New Year. I think this is the first Dharma talk of 2024. And I'm afraid it may not differ substantially from the last Dharma talk of 2023. As the old saying has it, news of the new year does not raise a bit of dust. That's how it should be. I was pretty ill this week, basically all week. With a variety of highs and lows. And probably could be called an occasion of what's known as status migrainosis, which means basically you're stuck in migraine land almost without interruption. So I had many opportunities to observe, shall we say, likes and dislikes. And of course, I think it was last time I gave a talk, maybe I quoted the beginning of Fukan Zazengi, where Dogen Zenji luminously sets out the he unfurls for us the universe of Zazen. And among other things, he says, if the least like or dislike arises, pardon, the mind is lost in confusion. So, from the perspective of Abhidharma, say, there are probably some moments in, for instance, an individual's day when there really isn't much in the way of like or dislike. And those phenomena, of course, come under the heading of samskara. The samskara skanda, the aspect of the person that is understood as either advancing towards something desirable or retreating from something undesirable. So there are moments where that doesn't happen, and there's probably a kind of a neutrality is established, but not for very long. Unless one is either ill or injured or dying, all of these skandhas are operating in concert. And although Buddha was at some pains to describe the human person in that fashion, I don't know if he was careful to spell out that those five facets can't be separated one from another. It is possible to contemplate our experience from the perspective of the five skandhas and understand our unfolding life as the symphonic interaction among rupa, vedana, saññā, samskāra, vijñāna. But those five headings describe a single, I guess we could say, thing, a single person. But those moments where there isn't much happening in terms of approach or avoidance, those are probably pretty few and far between, unless one is in a state, for instance, of profound trance or dhyana. Even then, there's enough ambiguity to have fueled centuries of disagreements among Buddhists as to what exactly is going on. And those disagreements continue to this day. Anyway, here comes Dogen, who was quite well versed in Abhidharma. Saying that if there's the least like or dislike, the mind is lost in confusion. So I don't know if that leaves a sense of much space for us ordinary mortals, for whom like and dislike is in some sense the engine of our continued existence. That being so, I don't think it's very likely that Dogen would define our practice according to whether or not we were successful in preventing the arising of any like or dislike. I think that's, shall we say, unrealistic. So, what was he referring to then? It might be fun to look at the Chinese, but as far as this particular sojourn in our earthly realm goes, that's out of my reach. But maybe some others can do that if they like. Bless you.
Excellent.
So, there might be, you know, some sense of phenomena arising that are, well, they kind of look attractive, and some others look not attractive. Then there is also what we might call the lurch towards or away. In our practice of Zazen, it is possible to experience this body-mind in the universe of likes and dislikes, but without the lurch. And to illuminate this possibility, Zazen is very useful. Let's presume we're not saddling ourselves with unrealistic daydreams and expectations, such as any day now, I will be able to suppress the arising of all thought. People do come to practice with somehow that in mind, that that's what it's about, right? Which is why we encounter so many people saying, oh, I can't meditate, you know, my mind is just too busy. And sometimes there's a deal of work to be done there to, first of all, get them to back away from that. At first we must gently urge, okay, now back away from that ledge, please. And eventually, people can experience their body mind without undue baggage, such as, boy, I really got to figure out how to suppress my thoughts. I got to attain some holy blankness. Now, among those ongoing arguments which I mentioned, there's one about whether, you know, what does it mean to say that there has been or there is happening what is known as Nirodha Samapatti, yeah? The absorption of cessation. Some Buddhists hold that up as the gold standard of practice or cultivation. Others, not so much. It is thought, because he said so, that Buddha practiced such yogic disciplines and that he found them useful, but not necessarily all that helpful to our human situation. Interesting. Yeah, interesting. But how does that address our actual life when no one wants to stay in Nirodha Samapatti indefinitely? Unless, you know, basically they're dead. So instead, how about seeing if we can abide in the universe that is this body-mind, where likes and dislikes are arising like fireworks, moment after moment, but without lurching towards or away. So among the treasures of our lineage is the notion that actually, yeah, that is possible. And it is possible with the application of what Suzuki Roshi called the great pure effort. How is that brought about? Well, it's to sit upright the way a mountain sits. Sometimes sun is over here and shadow over here, sometimes the other way around. But to purify our effort of obsessive doubts, what we have called corrosive doubt, and to practice as this mountain. This is called Gotsu Gotsu Chi. Again, one of, I believe, Dogen's quirky little phrases. So there is Gotsu Chi, which is kind of this mountainous energy. And then there's Gotsu Gotsu Chi, which is the mountainous energy without labels. The lurching, abandoned. Through the spreading influence of Gotsu Gotsu Chi, the mind will not be lost in confusion. Some of you know or know of David Chadwick, whom I met many years ago at Atasahara when I was there in the summer. And David was what in those days they called the Summer Shuso, that is the head monastic for the summer period. He was a quirky and delightful guy, and he still is. Anyway, lately he's been taking little snippets of Suzuki Roshi's lectures and posting them on Facebook. And, the other day, he posted a famous section where he says, something like, I think Maybe we should all go out of this endo and come back in again. But this time, don't bring anything with us. Don't bring any agendas or timetables. Nothing like that. Leave that all outside. And kind of let's start over again. And let's do that every time we come together to practice. Let's leave everything unnecessary, which is just about everything, outside the zendo. So that is the spirit of Gotsuchi. And it does not require some special blessing. Some Herculean effort. If effort is really Herculean, it may not be pure. So maybe there can be Herculean effort, but Hercules is long gone. Nowhere to be seen. Just mountain. Mountain, as you know, it can be a very seemingly busy place. Streams flowing and critters running around and snow, etc. But still, mountain is there. Just there. So that's the spirit of our practice, and it is within, well, I guess I could say it's within reach of all of us, all of you. But don't reach for it. Let it be, as somebody famously once said. So I spent quite a bit of time in bed this past week. I have medicine to take. As some of you know, I have a very closely supervising doctor. And I use opiate medicines. And some people may think that that's fun. But I assure you, it is not. All that medicine ever did was to create just a little bit of room. Breathe in. And if possible, prevent or maybe delay trips to the bathroom to vomit. So I have that medicine, and I have the Tryptan family, which is much better. But one cannot use it like PRN, as they say, Prorenata. You can't just like, oh, I guess I'll just take some. It's like, no. I was told no more than two or three times a week. It's like, well, what if you have more than two or three times a week of migraine? Well, sorry. It's like, okay. So even trying to follow all of the instructions and to use all of the resources that I have, still the sense is there of being in a kind of tight place and of being very thankful for having heard about practice. Because once again, there it is, Suzuki Roshi's little difference. Just a little difference, but that little difference is so important. And in that little difference is enough room for Gotsuchi, the mountain. Mountaining, if you like. I think the last thing I'll say is, it may also sound like I'm talking only about Zendo practice, cushion practice. I'm not. The mountain can continue mountaining right out in the street. So that's pretty cool. And Hartford Street's founder. Well, here's one verse. Hartford Street's founding spirits, but the founding abbot, Yasan, he also thought it was pretty cool. And you could tell that if you just hung around with him a little bit. So we'll just offer him a cup of tea and a short chant to say, thank you so much. Meanwhile, do you have any question or comment? Yes, Elise.
Oh, what does lurching mean?
Oh, to lurch is to like go tottering after something. Does that make sense to you?
What does it mean in the context of this Dharma talk?
It means something attractive arises and we go lurching after it. Like, oh yeah, I want that. Or here's an unattractive something. Oh, I'm going to lurch the other way. And then we're constantly doing this, which is, well, again, that's not very helpful. And to be able to see that we don't have to do that, actually, that is helpful. So, does that eliminate it at all? Yeah.
Did you want to die? Was this concept of soul?
And Buddhist, soul, did you say?
That Buddhist teaching. I'm asking this because either Suzuki Roshi or somebody said, the fact that you come to Buddhism, you're already enlightened.
Hmm.
So with that note, so why are we practicing this when we have so many other choices, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, no one's forcing you.
Right.
But then if you dig into the soul and it's like, how do you tie that?
Hmm.
Rebirth and reincarnation and then free will,
right,
and all that.
Yeah, I don't have so much explanation for that. The, you know, what is called soul, if you really pin people down on it, like very serious Catholics or something, you'll pretty quickly wind up in a theological discussion. And they'll quote Aquinas or somebody. And I never found that useful or interesting. So instead, Buddhism says something more like, well, the soul sounds like, you know, it's like your suitcase that you carry around with you from life to life. And of course, Buddha said, yeah, there isn't anything like that. It's more like the light through a prism creates a rainbow, and when the light shifts, Maybe there's no rainbow. Then the light comes back. Or is there again? There's another rainbow. And it goes on and on and on. So is that a soul? I don't know. That's a way to tell the story that makes some sense to my body mind. But you know, there are a lot of Catholics who would not agree. Say, oh no, that's not right. That's not how it is at all. It's like, okay.
But there must be something continuing. Like, it's the population of the world believes in that.
Yes, I know.
All major religions.
Yes. But
all
again,
saints and so many enlightened people.
Right. Right. And is that a problem? No, it's not a problem. Again, people will tell the story in a way that makes sense to them for whatever reason. But the story is always a little bit out of our grasp. It's so deep that just to set up some, okay, this and this, these are all truths and you must accept them. It's like, well, some faiths are like that, but that doesn't appeal to me. So this is kind of why I wound up not staying at either New Kamaldoli Monastery down there, mm-hmm. Mixer, or at Christ in the Desert. I go there and I love, that's a way I'd love to live. But I know that some of my fellow Catholics, if I actually sat down and talked to them, they'd be uneasy. Like, what is this guy, what is he talking about? Huh? Okay, well.
So maybe we don't have to explore that in this life.
I don't think we have to explain that in this life. And just sitting as a mountain sits, that's exploring. That's fine. But we don't have to have some explanation. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry for you.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask a little bit about the liturgy process. Because I think sometimes in pleasure and pain, what my body feels pleasure and pain, actually reacting to it some of the time doesn't seem not wise to me.
You say not wise?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, I mean, I need to take care of my body, right?
Right.
And sometimes it's not even only about pleasure and pain. It's also about connecting with other people.
Yeah.
And I do recognize that sometimes I'm going way overboard with going towards pleasure or away from pain.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if, because the way I heard the talk was almost like it's good not to do any lurching at all.
So if we say lurching, you're already somewhat off balance. Okay. So to approach and to avoid, you know, it's a question of degree. And if one is wildly off balance, then one is barely not falling on one's face in pursuit of such or avoiding something else. So lurching is not a balanced and elegant way of moving in the world, and usually leads to more suffering. But I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility, and one is, you know, we're all invited to study that, see whether that's true or not. And I think I have observed it to be true, and that especially in Zazen, to be able to see that there are likes and dislikes that I don't have to approach and I don't have to avoid. This is pretty important as an educational exercise, let's say. So does that make any sense?
It does. But I guess like I'm still feeling a reaction in the sense that it sounds to me that, because even like if I think about the concept of like being a mountain and like being balanced and elegant in the world, it sounds like an unachievable ideal because of my biological needs. Like,
yeah,
if for nothing else. And so I guess like the way that I see it, like I need to be lurching less and less.
Remember, there's movement, but not every movement is a lurch. A lurch is when you're already you're running to catch up with your own inertia. So to move in an aware way is one thing. Lurching is another. And it is an unattainable ideal. So attaining that ideal is not what we're about. The mountain has already arrived at the ideal. And to be able to trust that, that's a hard practice. So, anyway, that's what I say today. Dr. L, were you about to protest?
Oh, no, I was just thinking, well, you know, maybe the mind appearing lost in confusion is such a terrible thing.
Yeah, well, then that's not really confusion. Are mountains ever confused? Well, I don't know, maybe. But still. Gotsuji. It's pretty good. Thank you for your patience, everyone.
This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.